Perhaps one of the biggest contributors to the mental health struggles we're seeing in employees is in 2025, let's bring humanity back to work. Let's bring our whole selves back to work and not just our productivity and our brains. See if that can't make work not suck for you and for your coworkers in 2025. Erase all current meetings and start fresh. I have gone back and just asked, hey, is this meeting still helpful? What's the decision that we need to make? Because many meetings are just disguised as an update. Oh, I want to give you guys an update. Fine, send me an email. What's the decision we need to make? Recognizing the unsung heroes.
I love the unsung heroes. What I can't stand are the unsung fire starter heroes.
Ooh, who are the fire starter heroes?
An individual, they paid for his MBA. They just paid for my MBA. I've got my degree and they're not utilizing me. And I looked at him, I said, you were a tax incentive. I said, they don't care about your degree. That was a write-off. You were a tax write-off. They don't care.
I do think that that's so much of what contributes to making work suck is...
Welcome to the Make Work Not Suck podcast.
I don't know about you, but workplace frustration was such a 2024 thing. And now that it's 2025, we're going to bring you 8 simple actionable resolutions that can transform the way we lead, work, and collaborate. Whether you are a business leader or an employee, these will be changes not just to help make work not suck, but actually to make work enjoyable. Hope you enjoy. So we're going to talk about workplace resolutions today. But before we jump into that, want to hear about personal resolutions. Are you a resolutions guy? Have you done anything for that so far this year?
So I'm in the process of it. As you know, it's okay. January 2nd. So happy new year. And because we're still in that in-between week between, the just after the new year, but not really the start of the new year professionally, right?
Right.
So for me, this is a little bit of an interesting year because it's one, I have 1 year left because before I turn a decade until I roll into a new decade. I'm not going to tell how old I am.
Decade. Okay.
So okay. I have 1 year left in this decade before I turn into the next decade. And so for me, I'm even more reflecting on the past, 9 years of life and what do I want the future 10 years after this year to look like? So I'm deep in thought and resolutions, both personally and professionally, and I don't have the answer yet, but...
So are you now thinking longer than 2025 resolutions? You're talking about resolutions for your next decade?
Well, and keep in mind, I'm still on the 2032 plan. So
oh, that's right.
I'm checking, okay, 2025, where is it to 2032? And where is it in the decade of the year I'm in and et cetera. So yeah, I'm taking a big step back and doing a massive retrospective of life to figure out what the next, well, it's the next year to springboard into the next 10 years.
So in good EOS fashion, I'm going to want a thumbs up, thumbs down. Is your 2032 rock on schedule or off schedule?
I would say it's borderline off track, but I'm going to go ahead and keep it on. I mean, there's, rocks never come to fruition as you always hope they will, but perseverance, I'm going to call it on track. 2025 is going to be the make or break year of, is it really on track or off track?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about resolutions to make work not suck this year. We've got a couple of ideas, recommendations here of ways that you can start the year on a better foot, perhaps than how you ended 2024. And I like these for business leaders. I think some of these are applicable to all employees, no matter what level you're at. But the first one that we have listed here is erase all current meetings and start fresh. I have done this with a couple of my clients. And even if you don't erase the meeting, I have gone back and just asked, hey, is this meeting still helpful? Is this still a good use of your time? And I can think of years in, corporate life that I never asked that question. It was just, well, we have a weekly stand-up because we have a weekly stand-up. And nobody ever questioned why. And now that I think control my schedule a little bit more, it's, I think, a really good habit at the end of the year to look at your calendar and say, okay, I don't ever schedule meetings that never end. All of my meetings end at the end of a calendar year, the recurring meetings. So it forces me to put them back on the calendar and it forces me to say, do I want to do this? Or is there a better way to achieve what I'm trying to accomplish here? So how about you? What do you do with recurring meetings and starting the year?
All right. So I have to start with something kind of funny. So I asked ChatGPT to roast me. And one of the things that came back was my daily schedule debacle is what it labeled it as. And I think the canceling of the meetings, like you just said, is probably a good reactive step. But let's be honest, if you're not in control of that meeting or enough people want it or whatever thing that a meeting is attending to, it's just going to appear right back on your calendar. And so here's the funny thing ChatGPT came back with. It says, every time you talk about optimizing your daily schedule, a Google Calendar somewhere sighs in exhaustion. You've got 6 a.m. wake ups and 11 p.m. lights out like clockwork, yet somehow you're drained. Here's a thought maybe. Is it the 21 companies and 300 side projects you have? Your schedule isn't broken. You are.
Ouch.
So when I went back and I looked at all the reoccurring meetings and I read that and I was like, oh, yeah, the problem isn't the reoccurring meetings. It's how the meetings are getting on the calendar. So erasing all reoccurring meetings and doing a fresh start? Absolutely. I think it's great to just get rid of those mundane meetings. I think the real question is why does that meeting need to be there? And how can you solve it without sticking a meeting right back in its place? Otherwise, you get ChatGPT roasting you.
I think that's probably a good source of feedback that I think everyone should incorporate into their kind of annual planning is ask your admin or ChatGPT to give you feedback, ask them to roast you, whatever it is, because where else are you going to hear that kind of honest feedback?
you want another one? This one's sure. Good. Cause I had it roast me twice. It okay. says your calendar is a total boss battle. And yet the simplest enemy, the workout, is the consistent slaying you, or is consistently slaying you. Big strategy meetings, check. Structuring your daily, your day like a productivity ninja, check. Actually following through, nah. Skipping leg days, harder than a villain in a bad action movie skipping town. So it's not what the meeting is on the calendar. It's why does it exist? And how do you upskill yourself to not let that reoccurring meeting? Because again, clearing it off at the end of the year is just a means to force a decision.
It's a forcing function.
It's a forcing function, but it doesn't actually solve the root problem.
Right. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned decision. I've heard in many places that, if there's no agenda, we shouldn't have a meeting. I think that's good advice. What I think is better advice is if there is no decision to be made, there shouldn't be a meeting. Like, what's the decision that we need to make? Because many meetings are just disguised as an update. Oh, I want to give you guys an update. Fine, send me an email. Well, I want to make sure we're all on the same page. We can do that with an email. What's the decision we need to make? And then once that decision is clarified, you get then have kind of two follow-up questions. Who needs to be in the room to make that decision? And what information do they need to have to make the decision you want to be made? And I've been with very few organizations that do the hard work of preparing effectively for meetings. There's a few, but most people are very reactive. They schedule the meeting to figure out who needs to be there, to figure out what information we need so that we can then have another meeting, And then we have another meeting to talk about the meeting we just had. That is a disaster. And so forcing yourself to not just have an agenda and an owner, but a clearly defined decision, we will know we have been successful when we have decided X, is probably the best way to get rid of most of your meetings, because very few people have done the hard work to prepare for that before they try to put something on your calendar.
100% agree.
Resolution number two, establish a right to disconnect policy. I think this one's really helpful, right? It's kind of resetting the expectation that it is okay for people to be offline, whether that is, a particular day of the week where they just need to do some, thinking and some deep work, or certainly on evenings and weekends. I have worked with organizations that have a 24/7 culture. And if you've got a global company and you're getting emails from the other side of the planet, that's a hard thing to manage. But employees can't bring their best to work if they never leave work. And in a work from home context and remote context, that's getting harder and harder. So having some sort of a scheduled disconnect where I am unavailable from here to here, I think is critical for our mental health and for the performance of employees at all levels.
I have a love-hate relationship with this one. And it's not because I'm against the disconnect, the right to disconnect. I think where this falls apart is when people disconnect, I'm going to say selfishly, and that's probably going to be an unpopular phrase. When there's a team effort, a project, and someone just goes, oh, I got to disconnect from mental. Don't get me wrong. There are situations where that should happen. But I think is when the team or the culture doesn't know the rules, or it's very ambiguous when you can check out. And then what mm-hmm. happens is you're right in the final push of a project, and the one person's like, all right, I'm going on a mental break. Bye. And they've right. got a key part of the project. And actually what you do is you hurt the team more so than anything. So I'm all for a right to disconnect policy, but I think you have to establish the rules of disconnecting so that people know when they can. Hey, we've got this big project coming up. Why don't we disconnect now, or why we've got some bandwidth or runway? And then in the ninth hour, like when we're, you know, football analogy, when we're, right. you know, second and 10 from the goal, you know, second and goal, you can't take a timeout. You got to get to the right. finish line. And so again, this is where I'm not against the policy. I'm always against the lack of the structure around it that yeah. prevents it from being effective. Because then what happens? That person gets shamed because they took a mental break and they disconnected. And then the project stalled or whatever. And then what happens? They end up, you know, feeling bad and feeling guilty and being shamed and then working harder and then not wanting to take off or disconnect next
right.
time.
I think this is not just a policy for the crunch time, the end of the quarter, the end of the year, but it's how do you schedule this throughout the year so that you don't burn through your reserves, so that when crunch time comes, you've got something you can lean back on. And then there needs to be, and most organizations don't do this well, there needs to be some space on the other side of that, right? We get through the end of the quarter, you know, let's be a little bit lenient on PTO next week, you know, maybe give some extra days off, or, you know, have people coming in at lunch, whatever that is, because balance requires not just the extra investment in work, but then some extra time away from work to balance that out. And a lot of organizations have very short memories and expect people to put in the extra hours, but then don't give them the hours back once the crisis is gone.
Right. Well, in the US world, we call it the clarity break, right? It's that moment mm-hmm. where you disconnect and you gain clarity to see the vision and reconnect with the purpose. And, you know, it's that mental health check for a business owner. But I think, yeah. I think the biggest problem is, I think it's a leadership. It starts from the top down, because if the precedent from the top is not to take clarity breaks, or if the leader's taking clarity breaks without everybody knowing it out of fear, it starts with that culture setting at the top to cascade it down. And you have to disconnect. You're never yeah. truly on if you're not truly off. You have to turn Absolutely. Yourself off in order to turn yourself on to do the high caliber work. So I think in this one, a right to disconnect policy starts with the leadership team. And I think it's got to cascade all the way down, but it's the structure and how you implement it that is important. It can't just be take a mental break whenever you want.
Yeah. I think it needs to be both communicated and then modeled, right? So you've got to have that expectation set of, look, we expect you to take some time to unplug from work and recharge your batteries. But at the same time, you can have that in the handbook, but if the leadership team never does it, then there's going to be this unspoken rule that you're not supposed to follow that. You're supposed to just work constantly. And so both defining that and then following through and modeling it is important for a leadership team, because I think burnout is becoming a greater and greater issue every year. And there's, you know, a lot of articles, a lot of research suggesting that part of the reason why so many employees and leaders even are burning out is because they're never not working.
Oh, I'm guilty of it as much. Like I haven't really taken much mental time off, you know, in the last half of 2024, that the past 2 weeks has been nothing but a massive clarity break. At some point you hit the brick wall.
Yeah.
And the problem is as executives and leaders, is our team members are hitting the brick wall at the expense of us pushing the business forward.
Right. So yeah, we talk a lot about employee well-being And it's, you know, it's great to have a mental health hotline. It's great to have pizza lunches. It's great to have all of those things. And leaders should continue to do that. But I think perhaps one of the biggest contributors to the lack of mental health and the mental health struggles we're seeing in employees is the fact that they're never left alone. And so before you go hire a corporate chaplain or implement, massages in the office, maybe just implement a policy that we don't email on the weekends.
Well, let's go back for a few episodes where we talked about remote work.
Yep.
I think there's a big disconnect on, well, you're working from home, you're already disconnected, or, you know, like you just turn your brain off and go watch an episode of something at lunchtime. So isn't that a clarity break? Isn't that a disconnect? I think the fact that we've gone remote has probably made it even harder because there's a lack of, when everybody's in an office, not that you're micromanaged, but you can see people. You've got that sense of awareness of people around you and this, that, and the other versus when you're home. And I think there's a level of disengagement that happens from the remote side that is confused with disconnect because they're not the same thing.
Yes. Well said. Well said. All right. Third recommendation, recognizing the unsung heroes.
Oh, I love the unsung heroes. What I can't stand are the unsung fire starter heroes.
Ooh, who are the fire starter heroes?
The people that create the fire, then turn around and get recognition for putting the fire out. And it's like, well, wait a minute, you started the fire. So don't come in and be the hero and want the praise and this, that, and the other when you're the one that started the damn fire. On the flip side of that, I do love the unsung hero, the ones that just get the work done. They don't complain. They pick up the slack. They work hard. Unfortunately, they don't get enough recognition.
Yeah.
So I do think finding those individuals that are truly unsung heroes in your organization is a great thing to start the new year off with.
It is very easy. And many of the companies that I have worked with and for have what I've called a firefighter or a hero culture, right? They love to celebrate the person who, you know, saves the day at the last minute and, you know, works all night and fixes whatever was broken. There are very few organizations I'm aware of that have the maturity to find and celebrate the people who keep the problems from happening in the first place.
Yes.
And it's a harder thing to see. It's a harder thing to find. And it's a more mature thing to recognize. And most of us are more drawn to the hero than we are to the person who is just consistently keeping bad things from happening. And the problem with that is that when you only celebrate firefighters, you tend to get more fires. And eventually people begin to realize, consciously or unconsciously, that preventing fires in the first place is not really...
It's not rewarded.
It's not rewarded. It's not appreciated. And it would be better for me to let this thing fall apart and then put it back together than it would be to just keep it from falling apart in the first place. And that's selfish and it's not good for our clients, but we're all somewhat a product of our environment. And if you put people in that situation, they will start behaving the way you are treating them to behave. And you're telling them through your actions that this is what you want. And so I think this is super important for all organizations to do a little bit of a self-reflection, right? Take a look in the mirror and say, who are the people that we really celebrate? And not that they're bad people, not that we shouldn't celebrate them, but what is that celebration communicating to the rest of the organization about what we truly value here? And is that really what I want? Is that really the message that I want to communicate? When we always reward and recognize the person who's putting in 60, 70, 80 hours a week, we tell our other employees that we expect them to put in a lot of hours because that's what we're celebrating. And maybe that's the culture you want, but just be honest with yourself and say, yes, that is the culture I want, or no, we need to start celebrating something different.
Well, companies that have the hero culture, and then they wonder why they're hitting the ceiling and they can't grow. They wonder why they're stagnant or why they're just working so hard or why people get, you know, or I love it when, well, so-and-so left. Oh, well, they didn't do any work anyways. And then you come back 90 days later and they're like, yeah, it's absolutely falling apart. We realized that person was really important to the equation.
Right.
And we were rewarding the wrong person and we screwed the pooch because we let the wrong person walk out the door.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of football the last couple of days. You know, college football was, you know, a lot of good games yesterday. And it's very easy to recognize the person who scores the points. It is harder to recognize the people who did all of the hard work to put that person in the position to score the points. And I think it's easy for us in organizations to look at sales, to look at, you know, any of these metrics that people can impact individually and celebrate that. And they should be celebrated. But it also needs to be recognized that there's a lot of people behind the scenes that are making that possible. And those people deserve some credit too.
So here's a thing for you. It's how can peer nominated awards enhance team dynamic? I think that one of the issues is there's a lack of peer nomination because I think in good teams, those people can highlight those individuals. The problem is that's not what's seen. That's not what's communicated. And like you said, it's all based on the output, you know, who put out the fire.
Right.
And so the management and up top only sees who put out the fire and gives the recognition. The question is, how can you institute a peer nomination system? Because I guarantee you the employees, the peers of those unsung heroes know that they're the unsung hero and would willingly praise their name if given the avenue to do so.
Yeah. In healthy cultures, I think you're right. I think people understand who they're dependent upon. And in good cultures, they'll take the opportunity to recognize the people that make their life easier or could potentially make their life a lot harder.
8 resolutions to make work not suck. I think it would go down to how can you instigate, not only how can you recognize the unsung heroes, it's how can you implement a peer promoted recognition system so that peers can recognize each other that can be visible to the leadership team.
Yeah, that works much better coming bottoms up than it does tops down.
Right.
All right. 4, hosting monthly micro adventures for teams, planning these small but impactful activities, things like escape room, trivia nights. I've seen bingo night. I've seen poker night, volunteer at local nonprofits to really foster some camaraderie and build teamwork and even kind of refresh people's outlook and, you know, foster some creativity. I have seen these done with a lot of clients, but monthly is more frequently than I've seen them. I've seen them maybe once a year or twice a year, but monthly is interesting. What do you think about that cadence?
I actually like monthly, but here's the problem, I think, in today's age. You know, years ago, several companies I ran, we would do stuff like this. I mean, we do some of this stuff like weekly. More in the office, you know, have fun Friday afternoon. And then we'd do monthly stuff. And I mean, we went all out on like literally escape room, trivia, local volunteering. We did a lot of that. The problem was, or the advantage we had then is we had everybody in an office and it was easy to do that. I think now that you've got a lot of purely remote companies or a lot of distributed workforce, I think stuff like this is really hard. And how do you do an escape room if all of your people are in 27 different countries?
Right. Yeah. Like it's a lot harder.
You got to spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to fly everybody in to do an escape room. Like that's just not practical.
Yeah. That's not going to work.
So then it comes down to how can you start doing things like this virtually? You could do some of this stuff on Zoom, and some companies I've worked with, we have done stuff. We did an entire Christmas party with people around the world on Zoom, and it was very well put together. The VP of operations that pulled it off did a phenomenal job. I'm sure it was a lot of effort, but it's how can we leverage technology in a virtual world to make this more frequent? Because I think that's the human factor we bring into the work.
Have you seen anybody using AR or VR for that purpose?
You're going to buy everybody in your, I guess you can go one or two routes, right? Are you going to buy everybody in the company, an Apple Vision Pro at $3,000 right. each? Probably not. You know, MetaQuest.
Probably not.
Okay. MetaQuest is like what, $299, $350, something like that. But I think that would be awesome. And I think there's stuff that will come in time, but at the moment, not everybody has the technology or the tool to then leverage it. And unless the business is going to supply it, I don't think anybody can justify it at the moment, but I think it will be something in the near future.
With the impact of COVID and the distributed workforces, I think this is a big problem that a lot of companies are wrestling with how to solve, is how do you help people feel connected when they're working in all different buildings, different cities, different states, different time zones, different countries even. How do you help them stay connected when they're not physically near each other, perhaps ever? And I wonder if someone's got a solution in the VR, AR space that might crack the code on that.
Again, I'm sure that'll come in time. But, you know, I think even just using things like Jackbox.tv, you know, it's a fun interactive thing. You jump, you hop in on Zoom, have somebody share the screen that's the host. Everybody runs it from their cell phone. I think little things like that. Now, some of their content's probably not work appropriate depending on your culture. But I think just doing things like that, it just makes it fun. It's how can you have a meeting where you're just having fun to build that camaraderie and get away from talking about it's EQ versus IQ, right?
Right.
When you're talking all the business processes and SOP and blah, 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 it's all IQ. It's all work.
Yeah.
Whereas it really is, I don't know if it's how to host monthly micro adventures. It's how can you have more fun at work? Just because it's hard work doesn't mean it can't be fun.
Yeah.
How do you get more fun into the workplace where people enjoy and have that connection with their peers? Again, this doesn't mean they have to be best friends. It doesn't have to mean, you know, they're movie going buddies and they watch movies together and you don't have to run a book club. And it's just, how can you do some simple interactions that are just fun?
Yeah, I think that's great. One thing I have seen distributed companies do, if they've got enough employees in a kind of a geographic area, they do a like an in-person work day. So they'll rent out a couple of spaces around the country, and on a specific day, everybody in that city will come in and work together. And I've seen that help, even though they are distributed, I've seen that help create a little bit more of that camaraderie because you're able to actually see people face to face. But obviously only works if you're driving distance for that day, probably not worth taking a flight. But for larger companies that have kind of critical masses in key cities, I think that can work pretty well. All right. Resolutions for employees. You were kind of hitting on this one last time. The no work talk lunches, finding a way to, and this doesn't have to come from leadership, right? This can just go peer to peer, spending time getting to know your coworkers as human beings, not as coworkers. This one's hard for me because I tend to think about people very much in work mode. It's not that I don't care about them as employees, but they just kind of sit in my head as, oh, well, they're a project manager and this person's a developer and this person's in QA and this is a marketing person. And not really spending the time I know I should spend getting to know their background and where their family's from and like just what their hobbies are. Those kinds of very personal touches can be easy to do, but are also very easy to forget in the stress of getting things done.
I'm going to say that was a perfect leadership / coach answer.
Okay.
I think at the end of the day, we all have this idea of let's all share our birthdays and one thing about each other, but that's the coaching BS and leadership trying to force something down. At the end of the day, what you want to do is you want to create a culture of collaboration, right? Like there's a group that I'm with that we have a Discord and we play video games together. And so like during lunchtime, we'll hop in the Discord and you know, it's off I don't know if I should be advocating for this or not, but it's off the, you know, the company teams and off the company stuff. But we talk about BS stuff and, you know, play a round of a video game. But the nice thing is about this particular group, we're disciplined enough. Okay, when, you know, the time is over, okay, we played around, it was 20 minutes, back to work, back over on Teams. You know, it's not like we shut down Teams or ignore everything. I think there's a different company, we're on some Reddit forums.
Okay.
And discussing stuff in Reddit. I mean, there's several little things like that where these little micro cultures of where we're interacting with things that we like with each other. and just have real conversation outside of work. And I think if there's ways that you can promote that versus if you have, okay, everybody, we're going to have lunch in the, you know, cafeteria or the virtual cafeteria. And now everybody tell, you know, your dog's name. And if you have kids and
embarrassing story and two truths and a lie.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Those can be fun in a group setting, or if you're trying to do that inside of a team building event to kind of kickstart conversation. But I think if you're trying to do something in the everyday working environment, people are going to show up. They're good people, so they'll participate, but don't try to cram it down their throat. I think just encourage people to connect outside of work and create opportunities for that. I mean, again, I'm going back to when we had an office. We had a ROM, you know, one of the video games that has like 100 and something games for Super Nintendo.
Okay.
I'm butchering it. I'm a nerd, but I'm losing my nerdiness apparently. It was encouraged for people to sit there and play.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think that's, you could hop on Discord, you could hop on Zoom and do that. I think it's just creating those avenues for people to have personal connections as opposed to making it a forced function.
Yeah, I think if it's coming from management or from leadership, that's a hard thing to force. But I think peer-to-peer, it can be effective, very effective. And I think for leadership and management to model that. Like one of the things I love, I work out of this co-working space here in Atlanta. There's a pool table there. And it's really cool to see a leader just shooting pool with one of their employees. Now, I see employees doing it as well, which is fine. That's more of the peer-to-peer. But for a leader to kind of model that, say, look, it's okay for us to go take 20 minutes and just kind of check out for a little bit, check in on a personal level, whether it's, you know, cornhole or shooting pool or playing a video game, whatever it is, finding some way to connect personally with your coworkers is more important than I want to believe it is.
Yeah. Well, I think this is where things like Jackbox can be fun. And I think you don't have to be a manager to do something like this. It just be like, hey, we're going to play around a Jackbox. Anybody want to join? What's Jackbox? Oh, it's this collaborative interactive video game, basically, that, you know, use your cell phone or use your computer if you're in your computer. It doesn't take much to kick something like that off. You know what? There was one company, we had a shoot the shit meeting. And we'd throw up a poll in Slack and just, you know, hey, here's some topic ideas or make something up. And, you know, it took a little bit to get started because there'd be people like, well, I don't want to waste my time. But once it got kind of fun, it was just a shoot the shit meeting. It was once a month, just BS for an hour.
No politics, no religion.
No, sometimes it would be like, hey, has anybody seen this movie? Was it good? Oh, did you see this movie? Or, hey, I read this book and I'm just curious if anybody else has read it. I mean, you throw out some just starter questions, but it's more to just drive conversation than, you know, okay, everybody go around the room and tell us your favorite thing.
Right. Best thing that happened to you this weekend. What about this idea of a weekly learning hour? This is another recommendation. Dedicate 1 hour a week to developing a new skill, whether job related or not, to keep your mind sharp and engaged.
So I actually see companies having less problem with this one than anything else. I think the quote unquote lunch and learn, or, you know, hey, we want to talk about, you know, this new thing that came out, or this policy change, or this thing that impacts our work. I actually think from the learning and development side, I think this is less of a problem. I think the issue with this one is it turns too much management oversight, or it becomes the learning hour becomes the SOP dissemination hour.
Right.
But I think if you can keep it truly to, you know, kind of what we just talked about before, the shoot the shit hour, this is a little bit more targeted in the sense of, hey, we want to talk about this new thing, you know, Meta put out, or this new development technique, or this new product, or, you know, whatever it may be in whatever line of work you do. It's just have an open-ended discussion about that particular topic. And at the end of the day, most people, the role they're in, let's say they're a developer, they're going to want to talk about development-y things.
Yeah.
Because they're a developer. If they're marketing, they're going to want to talk marketing techniques. If they're sales, you know, finance, God bless you if you want to talk financial techniques, but if you want to nerd out on policy changes from the IRS, like I'm sure they nerd out on that stuff.
The latest general accepted accounting principles.
Yeah.
Yes. The organizations that I've seen do this very well do what you're talking about, right? They find ways to educate and inform, help people kind of develop themselves professionally. The next level, though, that I have seen is helping people develop themselves personally, right? So I have seen companies that say, look, I want to hear your two goals for this year. One of them is professional, which, you know, is your job here. And then one of them, I want you to have a goal that has absolutely nothing to do with work. And using that as a way to engage them both professionally, right? How can I help you achieve your goal this year? If you want to learn how to program in this specific language, or you want to get certified in this thing, great. I will help you with that. But I also want to know how to help you become a better version of you outside of work.
And yeah, I think that I got to call like Coach BS on that one, because managers, I think, want that well-intended, but let's be honest, the average employee does not, and I'm like, I'm putting myself in this bracket. I don't want life experience advice from my manager to some degree, right? I don't like, no, I'm trying to be better outside of you, not because of you.
If your goal is like, I want to run a marathon this year. Great. Now I know that when you're like, hey, can I get out of here at 4 o'clock today? I've got to go get, you know, got to go get my run in. It's like, yeah, I understand. That's a goal for you. That's not just you dipping out. It's, this is something you're working towards. And I might not be able to contribute to it.
That's having an understanding manager. I get that. That's having an understanding manager and like human connection to it, but they're not going to be your marathon coach.
No, they're not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're going to be your marathon coach. I'm going to say, I would like to know one thing that's important to you this year. And if there's any that you're pursuing that has nothing to do with work, and if there's anything I can do to help you in that, I would want to help. But even if I can't, I would still want to know and check in and how's it going. And
yeah, that's, I think that's great. Human to human connection with a manager. I think the manager trying to like, how do you want to better your life? And how do you want to like, that's F you, I come here for a paycheck. Right. But
right.
I want to give you a different story where I think this goes the other direction. And especially this is actually a Fortune 500 company, probably in Fortune 100. They're fairly large. An individual, they paid for his MBA. And now he's sitting at the, he's like, they just paid for my MBA. I've got my degree and they're not utilizing me.
Mm.
And I looked at him. I said, you were a tax incentive. I said, they don't care about your degree. That was a write-off. You were a tax write-off. And I said, you're getting frustrated because you got a free degree and they're not utilizing you to climb the corporate ladder. I'm like, you either got to move to a different department. And he's like, well, I got this degree. They should use me. They don't care.
Right.
And so I think there's also that level of, well, just throwing certifications and degrees and, you know, programs like that at employees doesn't always work out the way you want it to. Because if I went through the trouble to learn, you know, get the degree or get the certification or whatever, and then you do nothing with it, all you're going to do is frustrate me. Because now I have these newfound skills and I took the time and energy to learn. And I want to be rewarded from it. I'm smarter. I'm better. I can do the work better than, you know, the other people or somebody higher off the street, et cetera, et cetera. I want to be rewarded for that. And the reward, yes, to a degree is, well, now you know, that MBA that gentleman got, he could take that to any job in the world. So there was a value exchange, but now there's this frustration of, you paid for this and now you're not utilizing it.
Yeah.
I think it's a double-edged sword, but I do think there's always, I think you should always create learning opportunities for your people. I think you should always be trying to help upscale them. And I definitely agree a manager should be interested in their people's personal skills just so they can help better manage their work. That goes back to the disconnecting, one of the previous topics.
Right.
If you want to be the one that runs the marathon, you have to disconnect from the work in order to train for the marathon. So I think those go hand in hand.
Yes. All right. Tidying up your workspace for a fresh start. I'm a big fan of this one, big fan of purging over the holidays. Thankfully, my camera only shows one particular part of my office, so you can't see all the clutter over there and all the clutter over there, but it's killing me and I'm wanting to work on it. How about you? I haven't seen your desk in a minute, but last time I saw it, it was pretty bad.
It's been bad and then cleaned. And I've probably destroyed it and cleaned it probably 5 times since Christmas. And my shelves, my bookshelves, you know, my amazing bookshelves are a complete disaster mm-hmm. right now because I'm calling it remodeling them.
Okay.
I've decided I'm going hardcore on all my anime stuff. And so I'm like mm-hmm. ripping all the old stuff down and putting lights behind the shelves and redoing it. So,
Wow. Okay.
I have an order to my madness and why I'm doing it. But yes, I am a huge fan of fresh. If your workspace is cluttered, your mind is cluttered.
Yes.
And so I think sometimes there's just the level of not only clearing the desk, but sometimes reorganizing the desk. It just gives you that mm-hmm. different perspective, that change of mindset. And it's always a good one. If there's any way you can make a change in your physical environment, change it. And if your desk is an absolute clutter, start spring cleaning early. Don't wait till spring.
Yeah.
Do it in January.
Clutter creates stress and anxiety. And it's just not a good context for you to bring the best that you have to contribute if it's just a chaotic, cluttered mess. Well organized, it doesn't have to stay well organized. It doesn't have to stay perfectly clean, but at least having, once a year kind of restart there can help with your mood, help with your productivity, even help with creativity.
Some other things, right? Like the no talk lunches and, you know, you talk about the learning hour and the disconnect. I think sometimes just cleaning up your desk, I think some people are afraid of sharing, maybe not family photos, but mm-hmm. hobbies,
yeah.
things that you enjoy. Express yourself because you never know what conversation yeah. it can start. So yeah. maybe it may not be clean up your desk. Your desk may be already clean. It's maybe how can you express who you are a little bit more this new year that could start a conversation that otherwise wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, maybe it's personalize your workspace.
Well, personal touches like a photo or a plant can make your space more enjoyable. Well, I think that one rolls right into the next one. Build deeper peer connections through coffee chats.
I'm a big fan of coffee. Tea chats would also work. I've got some coworkers that are more tea drinkers. Tea's not necessarily my thing. I know there's such a thing as beer chats and whiskey chats as well. So it doesn't have to be coffee, but I think finding some way to spend some personal time with coworkers, getting to know them on a personal level, I think that's kind of the theme maybe of the last couple of recommendations. But I do think that that's so much of what contributes to making work suck is when we don't really know the people we're spending a third of our life with. We know them maybe professionally, but we don't actually know who they are as people. I think that does a disservice to ourselves. It does a disservice to them. And it does a disservice to the organization as well. So whether it's coffee, tea, beer, wine, or whatever, or lunch or breakfast, whatever it is, finding some way to connect and get to know somebody outside of a professional context, I think does good things for everyone involved.
It's funny. There was a company I worked with a couple of years ago that was a bunch of engineers and accountants. They called them beverage chats. Bring your favorite okay. beverage because it could be, you know, beer, coffee, tea, water, Coke,
yeah, whatever.
Soda, whatever. But because they didn't want to call it a coffee chat, it had to be pedantic and it was called beverage chat because technically beverage there chats. Could be many beverages. But hey, it worked for them because people showed up. They had great conversation. So I think, again, this goes back down to just being intentional about mm-hmm. having a meeting where you shoot the shit.
Yeah. I've worked with organizations that would give out gift cards, like Starbucks gift cards or whatever. And so you wouldn't even have to worry about the $3 it was going to cost you for that beverage. There was just kind of a gift card there. So if you and a coworker wanted to go grab a beverage together, it was on the house.
That's interesting if you're in person and you're encouraging it for out of the office. But in yes. reality, if you're in person, you probably got a water cooler or you've got a drink or you... At the end of the day, it doesn't even have to be a drink. It's just be intentional about scheduling a non-work chat.
Yes.
And if you're virtual, it's being intentional about scheduling a non-work chat.
Yeah.
Again, whether you throw something up like Jackbox or, which has been my favorite thing today, apparently.
Yeah, that's the third time recommending it.
I know.
This episode's brought to you by Jackbox.
Not, but I wish.
Actually, it's not. Sorry. The lawyer says I can't say that.
Now I want to go play some Jackbox. It's just being intentional about having non-work related conversations that just connect people together. And as a manager, you've got to facilitate these, not as a facilitator in an agenda. I think this is one that's not meant to have an agenda. Yes. Or a very loose agenda, right? Like this isn't a 38-point agenda where question 1, 2, 3, 4, and we're going to discuss. Like that's a team building function, a structured team building. On the peer side of it is just get to know the people you work with. You don't have to have a manager set this up. Just drop a note in Slack or Teams and like, hey, I'm jumping in this room. Anybody want to join me? I'm going to talk about Star Wars today. I love Star Wars.
I have never done that.
It doesn't have to be hard. You just have to do it. You just have to be brave enough to send the message and see what happens. You know what? The first time, two people may show up. It may fizzle out and die after that. I bet you'll be surprised on how much it can scale and cascade if you just try it.
Yeah.
We're social animals. We love community. And the second you take work out of the equation, you find we're a lot more social. It's crazy.
Yes. All right. So 8 recommendations. I like them. I think, you know, the theme, if I could try to draw a line through this, is maybe just more humanity, more personalization, right? Whether it's the right to disconnect, whether it's taking a coffee chat or a learning hour, cleaning up your workstation and putting some pictures up. I think part of what makes work suck is when we try to dehumanize it, when we begin to treat our employees, coworkers, peers, managers as these kind of robotic production machines and forget that they're humans with stories and families and hopes and dreams and emotions. And the more we ignore that, I think the worse work gets for all of us. And so these recommendations, at least the way I would draw a line through them, is to say in 2025, let's bring humanity back to work. Let's bring our whole selves back to work and not just our productivity and our brains, and see if that can't make work not suck for you and for your coworkers in 2025. All right. Don't forget to subscribe. Next episode, we'll talk more about some of the workplace trends, the top workplace trends of the year.
Make work not suck. Our podcast that talks about exactly that. Our process, vision, journey, culture, and results. We present real-world business solutions that make the difference. Our goal is to make work not suck. Hosted by Ryan Hodges, co-host Daniel Steer. Join us each episode and make work not suck.